Hello, friends. Thank you for tuning into the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, and a special greeting to all of you super intelligent, transcendent expansions of the Godhead sitting on your various peaks, in your caves, in your underground bunkers, in your cult compounds, in trees, in rivers, and wherever else you've decided to manifest as a beacon of love and hope and light to all of us who are fast asleep at the wheel of our own bodies, steering our meaty, fleshy, half-dead carcasses into every beer, whiskey, and genital that we can find. Thanks for luring us out of our stupid, boring modes and into more expansive aspects of the multiverse. We're all so fortunate that you decided to poke your beautiful flowery head out of infinity into our mundane, boring, and innately tragic temporal existence to show us that it's only tragic if we dig our claws into the illusionary skin of reality and try to keep the universe from expanding. Otherwise, it's a pretty fun roller coaster ride or a hot tub. Or a nice carriage ride through a beautiful park, depending on what appeals to your specific sentiments. So thanks again for that, you guys. And a big thanks to Sure Design T-Shirts. Sure Design T-Shirts sponsors the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. They are a wonderful t-shirt company that exists in Thailand and have figured out how to use quantum nullifiers to remove cuteness from the cutest animals on Earth. At the Sure Design t-shirt company, they have a parade of the cutest little puppies, miniature ponies, miniature pigs. Miniaturized animals are always the cute. Miniaturized people. March through this nullification beam. They come out the other side, ancient, broken, withered things, hissing at the sun, blind, usually toothless. Quite often they have a massive seizure or rip their eyeballs out from going through this nullification device, which was the here's a little trivia fact. It was the inspiration for Stephen King's The Jaunt, which I believe you can find in his book of short stories called Skeleton Crew. But that's neither here nor there. These they have a device where cute beings go into the device. Apparently within the device, they experience infinite time while being fully aware. And for us, it's just a couple of seconds. For them, it's infinity. They come out the other end, tottering, teetering, weeble-wobble things. Every bit of happiness and joy sucked out of them and blasted into the cotton that Sure Design T-Shirts use to make their incredible T-shirts, which is why the cotton is so soft. And more importantly, it's why the shirts are magnets and attractors for people's attention, because they have within them the stolen essence of some of the cutest creatures in Thailand. And that's why it's amazing that for a very low price, you can have these t-shirts sent over the great ocean and into your house and onto your hairy back or hairless back, depending on your gender and ethnicity. So Sure Design T-Shirts, go there to www.suredesignt-shirts.com, order one of their beautiful shirts, support them because they support us. And if you put my name in, Duncan, you get 10% off the shirts, and that's an incredible deal, an unforgettable bargain, and one that you should grab hold of now, because at any second, the sun snake that lives coiled in the heart of the sun could come bursting out of the sun and devour the moon, which would cause the tides to get fucked up, and I think it would also reverse or compound or extend or annihilate the menstruation cycles of all female creatures on the planet. I don't know what that would do, but it probably wouldn't be good. You don't want to mess with that. And thanks to the moon, which we all know is an egg for a pipe-smoking caterpillar named Freaky, the caterpillar hasn't been born yet. Once he does, everything gets better. But until then, we've got to take it easy and not piss off the sun snake, which is dying to eat the egg. Hi, everyone. And I spent the weekend in Big Bear. I just randomly got in my car and decided to go up to Big Bear and stay in the forest for a couple of days. And it was really, I feel so much better now that I did that. It's amazing. And it wasn't even that great a time to go up to Big Bear. I drove up there in a fucking some kind of Twin Peaks style storm, just fog, and I couldn't see anything, and the roads were curvy, and it was, when I got there, it was snowing. It wasn't like a great time to go up into the mountains at such a high altitude, but it doesn't matter. It wasn't the actual circumstances. It was the fact that I randomly managed to squirm out of the thought prison that I'd created, that I was going to spend the weekend in Los Angeles. And at the spur of the moment, I transformed that into a trip into the great vortex of novelty that lays just outside the walls of your prison that you've created for yourself, always waiting for you to dive into it. So don't hesitate anymore when you get a chance to do that stuff. Don't hesitate, just do it. Don't be irresponsible, but if you have the ability, if you have the means, if you have a way for you to do some incredible spontaneous trip that you normally would never do, just do it. Just go for it. Take the leap. You'll always be rewarded. That's the crazy thing. Even if it sucks, even if you end up way, 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 way up above sea level in some urine-stained cabin with snow blowing outside and the fireplace malfunctioning and smoke billowing into your room as you try to read or relax, it's still cooler than being in that stuffy, musky old sock of a life where you're curled up like some foot mite in the oily folds of your old sock, just suckling away at comfort and normalcy when you could be drifting in the winds of freedom and novelty. It's better. It's always better. Comfort's a plague. Comfort is a malarial Indian blanket that we wrap around ourselves, desperately trying to shield us from the winds of conflict and change that blow around us. And for a little while, a blanket soaked in malaria, a blanket soaked in plague, a blanket soaked in smallpox. I guess you can't soak a blanket in malaria because that comes from mosquitoes, but a smallpox blanket, that's what comfort is. It's a festering bacterial blanket that you pretend is shielding you from the winds of change. And maybe it is, but during that entire time, you're getting a deadly psychic disease that's worming its way into every pore of your body and gnawing at your pleasure centers, creating parasitic bits of your personality that have broken away from your main self. And that's when you end up with these behavior patterns where you look at the hand bringing the cigarette to your lips and you feel yourself inhale that toxic smoke and you think to yourself, who is this? What am I doing? Who is that? What are you doing? It's you. It's just a broken off fragmented part of you that's gained its own consciousness and awareness and is controlling the better part of yourself. It's what I call the meat body, the disgusting, hairy, angry animal that lives inside all of us, desperately waiting for us to lower our guard just long enough so it can pull our cocks out and start jerking off to low-level porn, to start pouring booze into our mouth and start stealing things and start eating shitty food just because it's all it knows. And that's the war that we're up against. That's the real war. The war is not with the Taliban. The war is not with Al-Qaeda. The war is not with Iran. The war is with the stinky, mealy, meat body, maggot, monkey thing that lives inside all of us and only wants to come and eat. That's the battle. We've got to get that thing whipped into shape, transform it from a fat, dopey, old, pale, silly thing into something that resembles Bruce Lee and is there to help us and not hinder us on our great journey towards happiness and towards the far shores of the multiverse where we get to exist in some form of nirvanic paradise for infinity. We're a long way from there, it's true, but with people like Daniel Bolelli existing in the world, I think we're gonna get there faster than we think. But before we get going, let me say thank you to all of you who've been supporting this podcast with your generous donations and with your purchases of t-shirts and posters from the Duncan Trussell Family Hour shop. You guys are keeping this thing afloat and prosperous, and I can't thank you enough for it. It's the most incredible thing ever to know that you people are out there sending your energy into this thing to see what happens to it. Thank you very much. And to those of you who haven't donated or haven't bought a t-shirt yet, that's cool too. You don't have to. It's not expected. And for those of you who haven't donated, I totally understand. You might not be ready at this moment to pour your green energy into the soil of this podcast and help grow a tree that is going to launch our entire species into the orgasmic pulsation of transcendent truth that we are on the verge of getting sucked into. We're going to get sucked into it no matter what. But if you feel inclined, go to DuncanTrussell.com and check out the shop. These t-shirts are fucking awesome. They were designed by the listeners, and there's only 40 chaos posters left. For those of you who just started tuning in, we've been selling these incredible posters that show me getting possessed by my satanic doll, Lil Hobo. I only printed 666 of them, and there's only 30 or 40 of them left. So we're about to be completely sold out of these. So if you want to own a piece of chaos history, you better go to the shop now and buy one of these posters. DuncanTrussell.com. We're only printing 666 of them, and I sign each one. Posters, t-shirts, donations, all awesome ways that you can help contribute and support this podcast. And if you don't want to do any of that, that's cool too, man. I get it. But please, why not go to DuncanTrussell.com and say hello on the forum? Get in on the conversation that's happening there, because we have got an incredible thing going. We have got a book club. We've got our own Minecraft server. And I believe they've got a Diablo 3 league or server happening over there if you really want to go under an electronic underpass and smoke the free base from Blizzard. You can do it at my website, DuncanTrussell.com. So now please send the finest distillation of your psychic love through the infinite space of the multiverse and directly into the pineal gland of this guest, Daniel Bolelli. Now please, now turn please, now your turn third eye your third in whatever eye, part of your whatever being generates your love energy, energy into, love into energy, the direction of the into multiverse, the direction where at this moment one of the coolest motherfuckers of the planet on the planet is existing. Is Daniel Bolelli. Daniel Bolelli. Daniel Bolelli. Welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Thank you so much, Duncan. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming over. Now, can you tell me a little bit about your background? You're a philosopher, an academic, a martial artist, an author, and a mystic. Are those fair labels to push upon you?
I'm a crazy monkey having a good time, you know. It's like, yeah. I hate experts in every field.
Yes.
Because to me, experts are what kill the joy in just about any field of life.
Yes.
So I know a lot about a lot of things. I don't know everything about any one thing. I don't give a crap about knowing everything about one thing. So to me, any field in which I can find life is interesting.
Yes.
Anything that can make me happy, I'm into it.
Right.
So most people, I don't know why the hell people seem to like specializing in one, two things, and that's all they ever care about.
Right.
I'm like, there's so much more to... I mean, I like martial arts, but still, if I talk about martial arts all day long, I shoot myself. You know, it gets boring really quick.
This is something I struggle with myself, because you'll hear two sides of it. You'll hear your side of it, which is let yourself explore everything.
Right.
This is a beautiful world that we're in. Why would you just hang out in one or two rides in a theme park? There's so many other things out there. Then there's people like, no, you must focus on one thing only and study that for your whole life.
But those are those assholes that will have their voice, right?
Yeah.
They are going to be like so heavy and annoying. And it's,
they're heavy.
I mean, and granted, you know, if somebody's doing heart surgery, yeah, I don't care that they are a good poet. I want them to do good heart surgery, you know. But other than that, most things in life are not about, you know, knowing every narrow little detail of one thing.
Right.
And so I dig... a million things.
Yes.
And I play with them and I have fun.
Yeah, and it's, right. So for you, it's, yeah, you're just spreading out. I do that too. I'm the same way. Right. I'm exactly the same way. And I feel guilt about it sometimes. But most of the time, I do find that people who are against that are assholes. And they're always, what is that? There's so many people in the world who seem intent on telling you exactly the way things work and exactly how you're supposed to live.
I think it's insecurity. You know, it's people who are scared of exploring real life. And so they have to feel that there's a set path, that there's a clear map that you have to follow, that that's the only way to do it. And it's the same whether it's religion, whether it is martial arts, whether it is any field, probably, you know. They are the people who feel lost unless they follow directions all the time.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, and there are plenty of people who are rushing for somebody to tell them what to do and how to, what to believe and how to behave because they feel lost too. And I'm like,
right. Yeah. Right. That's the other side of the coin, isn't it? It's a two-way street.
Yeah, completely.
You said people, you have this sense of wanting to be led.
Mm-hmm. It's like people always wonder, I mean, why Hitler or Stalin or Christian fundamentalist or Muslim fundamentalist, they always make it sound like there's some big conspiracy behind it. People are would paying gold to become a member of these things because it makes them feel safe.
It's, you know, laziness.
It's totally laziness.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's just a form of laziness to have a leader.
Yep.
And but then the what's the so the but there's certain times it's good, you know, certain times it's good to be led around. Like with Mistress Justine Cross, the dominatrix. And
I'm sure that is the case.
But not in life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
not in life. But you do need people to teach you. I mean, martial arts, for example, is a, you can't just learn martial arts from a book.
No, I give you that. And in fact, but that's to me is a guide. You know what I mean? It's a difference between a dictator and a guide. You know, a guide will show you, you know, I'll show you what I know. It's limited. There's only so much I know. What I don't know, I'll refer you somewhere else. You show me a new way. Cool. I learned something new. You know, that's a good open-minded way of learning from each other.
Right.
If it's just, you know, let me reveal you the secrets of life. I'll tell you all about, you know, all knowledge come through me. It's like, shut up. You know,
nobody's, that's bad.
Yeah.
And some people really do that on some people that to me, the there's two different versions of the people who do that.
Mm-hmm.
One version I find immensely entertaining. Jim Jones, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Now, why I find him entertaining is because he...
Entertaining is not a word I've yet heard about Jim Jones, but yes.
Oh, my God. He was such an great... he was a showman. He was an entertainer. Yeah. He was like Elvis. He had soul. He was into it. But what's fascinating, because I watch his documentary sometimes, what's fascinating to me about him is he believed it, man.
Yeah.
What he was saying, he believed it.
Yep.
Now, that's, to me, there's some nobility in that, even though ultimately the end result of it was an awful moment in the history of cults in the world. But still, it's the what's even worse than Jim Jones is the person acting like that who doesn't fucking believe it.
Yep.
And is still letting people come and still taking on a flock.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, that's somebody who, you know how to play the game, know how to exploit people, know how to get money, sex, whatever they want out of it. And it's like, it's obviously evil. It's smart. It's messed up.
It's deeply messed up because you've made the decision at that point when you've gone down that path. I guess you've just decided that there isn't anything worth living for.
No.
There's no point in having any integrity at all. It's just all about coming and getting some cash and dying because you're a soulless piece of shit.
I like the way you put it. A soulless piece of shit. I think I'm going to use that more and more often.
Soulless piece of shit.
I like that.
Because as I was studying you and looking over your stuff and your research into the warrior and the warrior archetypes, and this is something that something I read in an interview that you did was you said that it's all about action, not about it's all about lately. You said lately I'm just into sweating, right?
Yeah,
not about talking. And I thought that was really a beautiful thing to say because it's so easy to get waylaid and think that you're doing something when you're doing nothing at all just by studying and reading.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's a matter of balance. If naturally you are this athletic, more action-driven kind of guy, then you should probably slow down and read a book once in a while.
Yes.
But if you are, you know, a nerdish guy like me by nature, where I'm more like, ooh, let's look at the birds and read poetry and stuff, that is like, okay, shut up, get in a cage now and get something else going for you, you know, it's like... So it's just to round up your personality, I guess. It depends on...
And I'd say the what you just described is more often the case than the other way around. There's we live in the culture right now, men have become feminized, right? That's just something that we're taught. Maybe it's... Sometimes I think it's because of the divorce boom that happened, and a lot of boys got raised by their moms and were... taught to be more feminine than masculine.
And I mean, there's something cool about it, because the old archetype of the macho guy who just break a beer bottle on his head and burp at every turn is not particularly attractive either. I mean, there's strength there, but there's also stupidity and lack of sensitivity and all of that. So it's like, you really need both. You know what I mean? It's like, you need to have a strong feminine side. You need to have a strong masculine side for everybody, men or women.
You know the symbol of Baphomet? You know that symbol?
Yeah, yeah.
The hermaphrodite?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's kind of it. And that's like the god of the new Aeon that you know, Aleister Crowley talked about, which is this balancing those two energies, because Baphomet? Can you help my pronunciation on that?
No fucking idea. So I'll take whatever you say.
So for those of you who don't know, this is a very spooky looking occult figure that is a goat that is a hermaphrodite, pointing up, pointing down, and it's kind of a Western occult version of maybe the Tao. It's sort of the balancing of both sides. You don't think
so? Yeah, totally. But that's like the Tao on a really bad acid trip, you know what I mean? Because the Tao is a cool symbol. It's like, you look at that, you're like, Jesus, that's fucking scary.
You're not going to shit yourself if a Tao appears in front of you. If a Baphomet knocks on your door, you're going to freak the fuck out. Get away from me! It's a spooky figure, but so is a lot of these figures are spooky. Like, take Kali, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A spooky figure, you know, a representation of destruction and a specific mask worn by used to describe a part of the spectrum of life. But these things are, this is something I think the idea of being a warrior, where it becomes important, is this is a representations of conflict or the darker side of things.
Yeah.
Conflict isn't pretty.
And it's everywhere. You know, it's not, people think that you can avoid it. You can't. You know, it's not whether, I mean, not that everybody's going to hop off fighting in a cage or something, but at the same time, you're going to deal with shit all your life. There's going to be stuff that try to stand between you and happiness at every other turn, and you need to deal with it. That's conflict.
That's what conflict is. Yeah. For you, conflict is recognizing an obstacle, getting in between you and paradise, and kicking its fucking ass.
Precisely. That's the game. Exactly.
That's the game.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to, there's no way around it. And so many people are pussies, man.
No.
So many people are desperately trying to avoid that at all costs.
And I mean, then I understand it, because nobody likes to deal with it. You know, it's like, fear sucks, pain sucks, all of those things are awful. And yet, if you're alive, good luck, because that's the nature of the game. You know, I'm not saying that's all there is. There's also a lot of fun, cool, relaxing, beautiful things. But you're going to deal with pain, you're going to deal with heartbreak, you're going to deal with all the ugly emotions, and either you can deal with them or they will crush you, you know?
Don't you think that, do you think that, this is something I was wanting to ask you, do you think that the prevalence, the growing depression rate in the world is a result of people avoiding conflict?
Yeah, I mean, fucking start sweating more, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, and don't get me wrong, I understand when people tell me, you know, life is so damn hard, there's the, I get it, you know? Don't get me wrong, I totally see it. I've been through plenty myself. I see it on, so it's not like I'm saying, oh, look at the, I don't have this new age, you know, oh, it's all for the best or some shit like that. It's like, far from it. I get it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, being depressed doesn't help anybody, you know what I mean? So it's either you shoot yourself because life sucks, and I get it, in that case go for it, don't whine about it, just do it, or decide that you can deal with, despite all the heartbreak, this and that, you can still find a way to have a hell of a time. Like, one of my favorite guys is a Zen guy from the 1400s, Ikkyu Sojun. He says, if they throw me into hell, I'll find a way to have a good time.
Yeah.
And I was like, I love that guy. It's not denying that there are crap out there, but it's like, I won't let it spoil my mood, you know?
But these warrior arc, yes, I know exactly what you mean. In the, you know, in film and in stories, these heroes, these warrior heroes are always depicted as people who will take anything from their environment, mm-hmm. who will use the negative things emerging in their environment, and those negative things end up being the solution right. to the greater problem that they were having.
Right.
They're like master alchemists who are taking lower level elements and transforming them into gold. That's what a warrior is doing. It's taking this thing that we all avoid at all costs.
Exactly.
And shifting it around.
Yeah, but I mean, right before we started, you were talking about, you know, getting the control freak vibes and being, you know,
yeah.
And to me, I've been a control freak all my life.
Yeah.
And then I realized that doesn't matter how tight I hold and how I try 17 different things to avoid crap, it's going to happen anyway. And right. I have no control over it. And I mean, in some ways, it's an ugly realization.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's liberating. Because then you know that, you know, even your worst fears is like, yep, yeah, they'll probably come around. So what?
Right.
At that point, you either shoot yourself or you relax. It's like, well, then I have nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and so the very same thing that's the worst horror is what in some way liberates you from, because you're not afraid anymore. You're that's like, it. Eh, that's the way it's going to be.
Yes. Yeah. Because here's the thing. What's worse? A fight, a battle, a temporary battle. How long does a fight last in reality? How long does a fight really last? A temporary battle or a lifetime of fear? What's worse?
Exactly.
Spending every day dreading this thing that you're afraid is going to rear its head and avoiding it at all costs, or storming into that fucking cave and chopping its head off, or dying in a glorious battle?
Exactly. You know, if we fail, let's fail heroically, you know, let's do it well.
And this is why this is the story of like how it's so, and then I never understood this when I was younger, because I was, you know, I didn't have anyone in my life who really taught me this about conflict or mm-hmm. fighting, but you begin to understand this idea of like how dying, like in battle,
mm-hmm.
is the best way to die, because
right.
you're dying a hero, you're dying overcoming instead of weak and just accidentally, you know, whatever, rotting away. Or
Valhalla, here I come. Yes.
Valhalla, hammer of the gods, Led Zeppelin. Okay, we're going to cut real quick. One of my favorite things in the world to do is to get stoned and run on the treadmill or walk or do anything. And when I do that, I'll often put in my earbuds and listen to the Dark Tower series, which I downloaded from audible.com. The Dark Tower series by Stephen King is one of the most psychedelic, mind-bending stories that I've ever read. It's definitely my favorite series of all time. I put it over Tolkien, over Dune. I'm sorry, but I love it. I'm a Dark Tower nerd. I know all the characters, and if I ever met Stephen King, I would probably start weeping and say some esoteric thing like, there are other worlds than these. The books from audible.com are read by someone who sounds like Clint Eastwood. It's incredible. The whole series is incredible. And now I'm proud to announce that we're working with audible.com, which means that if you go to audibletrial.com/family hour, you can get a free audiobook download, which means you could download The Gunslinger, the first in this series, for free. All you have to do is sign up for a 30-day trial period. And I guess if you don't like it, you could just cancel it. So there you go. Go to audibletrial.com/family hour and sign up, and you get a free download of an audiobook. You don't have to download the Dark Tower series. You could download some other book, but I highly recommend the Dark Tower series. And if you do download it, go to duncantrussell.com and let's have a conversation about it, because I truly love it, and I'm listening right now to the third in the series, The Wastelands. So, audibletrial.com/family hour. If you forget this URL, the link is going to be in the comments section of this podcast. Okay, so, the Hammer of the Gods, Valhalla, fighting in battle. I wanted to see if you could help me reconcile two different, completely different religions from two different parts of the world. I'm going to read you from the Bhagavad Gita. Uh-huh. I'm sure you're familiar with this text. I want to read you the end of the first chapter and the beginning of the second chapter. So this is for those of you who don't know and are probably just tuning in, I talk about this text all the time. This is a the story of Arjuna and Krishna, and they're about to engage in what is maybe the greatest battle in the history of India, in this story, in the mythology. Right. And Arjuna, the warrior, has had Krishna, his charioteer, bring the chariot between the two opposing forces on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the battlefield of sacred truth, and is looking out at the opposing forces and has said to himself, or has said to Krishna, "Fuck this. I'm not going to kill people." And that is...
Is that a literal quote from the Gita? Fuck this. Okay, just checking.
That is the literal...
I skipped on that line, I guess. You know,
people mess up the interpretation. They mess up. That's what the Sanskrit actually stood for. It actually, the actual verse as it really goes is,
fuck.
Holy shit, are you fucking kidding me? You want me to fucking kill all these people who I know, who are fathers and brothers and friends? Are you out of your fucking mind? Fuck this, I'm not going to fight. That's the real...
I think you should rewrite it. In your new translation from Sanskrit, I love it.
And he also says, Christ, I'm shitting myself right now. I think he said that too.
Very believable. I take that.
By the way, that's just what goes through my mind when any conflict comes up. That's my conversation with Krishna. It's not this. In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, and I'll paraphrase, "Oh Krishna, I see my own relations here, anxious to fight, and my limbs grow weak. My mouth is dry, my body shakes, and my hair is standing on end. My skin burns, and the bow Gandhava has slipped from my hand. I'm unable to stand. My mind seems to be whirling." That's
exactly what happens.
I'm shitting myself. Yeah. That's what it is. It's like, you start shaking. You can't believe. It's terrible to get into conflict. And so then this chapter ends. Overwhelmed by sorrow, Arjuna spoke these words, and casting away his bow and his arrows, he sat down in his chariot in the middle of the battlefield. And that's known as Arjuna's dejection. And then Krishna responds to Arjuna, Krishna being the guide, God, the universal truth, universal principle, whatever you want to call it. He says, "This despair and weakness in a time of crisis are mean and unworthy of you, Arjuna. How have you fallen into a state so far from the path to liberation? It does not become you to yield to this weakness. Arise with a brave heart and destroy the enemy."
Damn. Yeah, that's... Wow.
Now, reconcile this for me if you can. So we have this. This is a clearly saying, get the fuck up and fight.
Right.
What are you doing? Yeah. You're a warrior, fight. How do you reconcile that with the New Testament and Christ saying, you know, turn the other cheek,
right,
carry your enemy's coat, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, love your neighbor as yourself? How do you bring these two ideas together and find some balance between the two?
Depends on which mood you wake up in, I guess. No,
right.
No, I mean, they both make sense. Clearly, in practical terms, it depends on the context. Because, I mean, if you're just going out and say, I'm just going to bash everybody's head who stand in my way, you're a psychopath, and there's an issue there. If at the other end, you're always... If turning the other cheek is all that you ever know, and you are this gentle, sweet person, which is great, you know, it's nice to hang out with you, but at the same time, there's no choice there. You know what I mean? Because you're not capable of going out and kicking ass, the only thing you can ever do is being this mellow, peaceful guy, which is nice, but it's not really a choice.
You're
it's
saying because... Jesus didn't know karate.
Well... Yeah, that's awesome.
It's easy to say.
Right.
Right, that's the easiest thing to say. When you don't know how to fight, there's nothing easier than to be like, oh, my brother, why would you...
Why,
you fool, why do you fight? Turn the other cheek. But that means something if you know how to do a rear naked choke and send that person into oblivion in 30 seconds when you're like, you know what, I'm not going to fight.
Right, and I remember there have been times when I didn't get into a fight by the few times when I wasn't scared because probably I was too drunk or whatever. But I remember saying to somebody when, you know, it was building up, was going there, and I just have this attitude of like, look, if we want to do it, let's do this. But at the same time, really, it's like, I want to have another drink. There's that hot girl there that I want to check out. Yeah. Really, we're going to... Okay, fine, you know, let's go. So there wasn't that sense of fear. So the guy was like, oh shit, this guy is ready to go.
Yeah.
But he's showing me a nice way out.
Yes.
Yeah, let's have a beer together. That's better.
That's cool. Like,
if I had been apprehensive, I would have just had my face punched in, you know.
Yes. And that you would have ruined the party.
Yeah, totally. So.
Yeah, it's that. It seems like what the idea that we're talking about here is that you've got to earn it. You can't just have it. You've got to earn it.
Yeah.
Everything. You've got to earn everything.
Yeah.
You don't just, nothing's for free in this dimension.
That's not the way it works.
For any animal life, any animal species that you see, it's brutal. Like when you look at the animals being born, when you look at the what they have to go through to earn life, to earn their life, it's a combination of luck and skill, but they have to earn it.
Yeah, I mean, you get this very kind of sweet, hippie idea of Mother Nature. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I love nature, it's great, but at the same time, nature is insanely brutal and merciless and can kick your ass. And that's the nature of the universe, you know.
Vicious.
Yep.
Baphomet.
Yep.
The goat-headed being. Kali, carrying the heads of the gods around her neck.
Yep.
This is the thing people want to, this is the part of the spectrum of life people want to avoid.
Of course. Who the hell wants to deal with that on a daily basis, you know?
And I really think this is why people are goddamn depressed. I really think, because it's like, I can remember not that long ago, I was terribly depressed. Mm-hmm. I wasn't doing anything, and it was all about avoiding conflict, all about avoiding pain. And it just gets you fat.
Absolutely. Because you, and in the end, you fail anyway, because you can't. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter how hard you try to avoid it, you're still going to get there. And so at that point, really, you just shoot yourself because you say, you know, I can't deal with it. It's too much. And then I get it. You know, it can be too much.
But so you think suicide's a viable option in those cases?
Totally. I completely respect it.
The samurai. You're talking about, how do they say it? Harry Carrot? What do they call it?
Seppuku.
Seppuku, which is, tell me about that.
Yeah, that's a lovely Japanese tradition where you stick some 12 inches of steel in your stomach, you twist left to right and then upward. These guys are not into dying easy. And, you know, their act of ritual suicide is insanely painful, where you literally disembowel yourself. And then before you can, because again, Japanese being Japanese, before your face start contracting too much and getting all weird and ugly looking, then your friend who's standing behind you is going to chop your head off with a sword.
How nice.
I know, sweet. And I'm like, damn. I mean, that's, I guess, their way of saying I'm sorry when you fuck up. You know, if you mess up, that's what you do. And any kind of loss. So, I mean, of course, if you take it that far, you're a bit insane, clearly, and there's a level of fascism involved that's scary. Right. But at the same time, there's something noble about the idea that either I live honorably, I live in an awesome way, or I can check out at any second. If I can't live the way I want to, boom, I'm out.
Right.
And I respect that, you know. It's too many people live and they are already dead. You know what I mean? It's like
never born.
Yeah, it's like either live or be dead. Don't annoy me just going around. Yeah. You get me stuck in traffic this way, you know? It's like, get out of the way already.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, man, here's the thing. For those of you listening who feel like you're dead and feel like you're depressed, I think that what you'll find is that the moment you start just experimenting with integrity, the moment you start playing around with the idea that you can pull yourself. See, I have this idea. This is something I want to talk to you about, a personal trouble that I'm having. I have this idea of that we exist in a multiverse and that there are infinite numbers of possibilities, infinite timelines all happening at once, that time is a bit of an illusion, and that there are all these nodes of possibility. And if you tune into the specific node of possibility and then fight your way there, overcoming any obstacle standing in between you and that node, then you can enter into paradise. Valhalla, Shambhala, whatever you want to call it. So I had this, the symbol that I've been using to describe the dead state that you're talking about is the Harbor of Sorrows, which is where people are stuck in a harbor. They don't realize maybe that they're even on a ship. Right. They don't even know that they have the possibility to travel. Yep. They don't know they can get out of the harbor. They think that they're stuck. The ship's in disrepair. Maybe they're overweight. Maybe whatever. Maybe they're addicted to heroin. Maybe.
Right.
So the idea is fix up the ship, set your sails, and head out into the great open sea. And what you're saying is, and if you don't want to work on your fucking ship,
check out.
Sink it,
yeah,
asshole.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
There's too many ships in the harbor. Now, so here's, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you.
Oh, no. I was going to say, most of these come to me from when I was a teenager. I remember one of my grandmas came to visit, and my mom for like days in a row tried to make her happy. And my grandma was like, you know, if she win a trip to a Hawaii, she would be like, yeah, but Hawaii in this time of the year kind of sucks. Yes. And the airplanes fall. It's like nothing could ever be good, right?
Yes.
And so days trying to make her happy and finding just shit thrown back at you. After a while, my mom just sat her down on the couch and said, you know what, mom? If you are that depressed, yeah, I am. Okay, I get it. And if you don't think that life can get better, no, it can't. It's awful. It's like, okay, I understand that too. Tell you what, if it's that bad, I'll help you kill yourself. You know, we'll do it safe and easy in a way that you don't hurt and you can check out. Or you quit whining and I'll try to help you be happy. I'm going to help you either way, but pick one because this is annoying.
Wow.
For the next month, we didn't hear one peep out of her. She was all happy and thrilly. And I was like,
wow.
So it ultimately choose, you know, two doors, pick one. And
that is intense.
You know,
and what your mom did was heroic. That was a warrior. That was vampire slaying.
Yeah, I spent the rest of the day going, oh my god, my mommy is awesome. I can't
what
believe she said
example.
That. Yeah, yeah.
An incredible example. And how often do we run into these people who, no matter what arises into their whatever phenomena arises mm-hmm. into their subjective universe, it's always bad.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what. They've got shit. They've got shit in their soul.
Yep.
They've got a. What is that? Why are people like that?
I don't know. I mean, I get it because I've had. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm judging it from the outside and not knowing what that feels like because I've done it so many times.
Too.
I've like get into depressive funks and start seeing everything negative and all of that. And I think, and again, I think that's fear too because it's like if I paint it horribly, then whatever comes may not be quite as horrible. And then it's like weird mind games they are playing with yourself to try to, you know, cower in a corner, make yourself feel a tiny bit better and avoid too many blows.
Yes.
And you can't avoid pain.
So it's cowardice.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? That mind state of dismissing everything in the world as bad? It's a form of cowardice.
Yeah.
Yellow belly.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
A case of the yellow bellies.
Right. Because it's like, yeah, you got burned by fire and then now you stay away from anything that's hot. It's like, well, I mean, I get it. Yeah, it hurts, but
right.
Then don't leave.
Right. Yes, because really you're not alive anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is the invitation to, this is exactly what, in the Bhagavad Gita, this is what Arjuna is saying. It's called Arjuna's dejection. And earlier in that chapter, he says, I'm going to go in the forest and live like a monk. I'll be a beggar. That's what he says. I'll just go and be a beggar. And Krishna said, you obviously don't understand because you're going to fucking die no matter what, man.
Yep.
That's the idea. Like, it doesn't matter if you go into the forest. If you go into the forest and live like a monk, these people are still going to die on this battlefield. These people are still going to be eaten alive by the dragon of time.
Yep, yep, yep.
So what are you doing? Come on, get up, get up, get up.
That's a cool speech. I like that one.
Yeah,
that's,
I love it too, man. It's like I took you to fucking Disneyland, kid.
Right.
We're in Disneyland. Why are you weeping? Do you know how expensive this place is?
Yeah, exactly.
Shake it off. But here's the question I have for you. So I spent like the last 3 months or so really working hard to get my life together and
mm-hmm.
really like making myself wake up early in the morning, having goals, setting out like a list of things to do every day, exercising all the time. And I experienced a rebirth, I'd call it. My life suddenly became a million times more vibrant. But now I've come upon another problem. Which is, what if there's a kind of apathy that's not, there's a kind of like, how do I put it? You overcome, and like, okay, so if we use the ship idea,
mm-hmm.
you set your sails, suddenly you find some wind, your ship is shooting off across the sea, but then it's so easy to get off course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
During the second part of this thing, it's so easy to get distracted and waylaid and fall into those old patterns.
Yeah, that's why as much as I like variety, it's also good in life to have some things that are solid, that you have some rituals that you go back to, that they is like turning the light back on, you know, it's like you rekindle the fire, something that, because inevitably everything, doesn't matter how good it is, it's not going to last. After a little bit, it's going to go away. And unless you know how to light that fire back on, then you're back in the dark.
Right.
So you need to have whatever that is. For some people it's working out, for some people it's reading some cool books, or you listen to some music, or you take an acid trip, whatever, you know.
Yes.
People are different, but something that you know does it for you, you know.
Right.
Something, and preferably 2, 3, or 4 things. So if one that day doesn't work, you have another one. Yeah, you need to, because nothing lasts forever.
Nothing
you
know? Lasts.
No,
of course. The fire goes out.
Totally.
That's, I love that, because it really is like a fire.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just light a fire once.
No.
You got to keep at it, unless it's a goddamn nuclear
reactor. Yeah, exactly. But yeah,
usually you're screwed.
It's going to go.
It's going to go.
Yeah.
So you're always perpetually in the struggle to relight the fire that you initially lit. Where do you, what kind of martial arts do you study?
It's funny, Ben, because with martial arts, I started out having this, you know, most people start out with too much testosterone and they just want to punch somebody, and then they mellow out and they start reading books about it. I started with this very romanticized view of Zen and the martial arts, and I'm just going to meet Master Yoda, who's showing me the secrets of life, you know. So I started out doing Tai Chi and doing my very pretty, mellow, meditative things.
Yes.
And then I started evolving more towards self-defense-based type of martial arts. And then even there was too much talk, because in all self-defense training, you can never really go at it, because, you know, you can't really grab somebody's eyeballs out or something. So it's all like, this is what I would do. It's like, yeah, but how the hell do you know that that's you're going to be able to pull it off, you know?
Right.
So then I started shifting more into combat sports. And so right now, if somebody, main thing I do right now is grappling, boxing, MMA, basically.
Jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu, of course. And so when somebody starts talking too much philosophy about martial arts, I'm like, let's shut up and wrestle, okay? You know, we're done. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
I get too many words already in my day as it is. Let's have a moment of just pure action and nothing else.
Right.
And combat sports are beautiful that way, because even you can build too much ego, because you're going to have to prove it the next time you step on the mat. And there will always be somebody who kicks your ass. So you can only talk so big, because it's not going to last very long.
I took jiu-jitsu with Eddie Bravo for a little while.
Awesome.
And I not only did I not talk shit, because I've never considered myself much of a fighter, but he'd always pair me against the one girl in the class, because I think he thought it was funny. I didn't mind. She was cute.
Nice.
But she would totally kick my ass, man. There was once you know, it doesn't matter your gender. If you know, it turns you into an anaconda, essentially.
Yeah. If you're good, yeah.
If you're good, you're just some sort of, I don't know. You see the best grapplers.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is reminds me of this idea of like, no matter what arises, whatever the conflict or the obstacle arises in front of you, in this case, the other person, it's like they're shapeshifters.
Right.
You can warp and twist into all these different patterns and shapes instantly, fluidly. It's one of the most beautiful things to watch ever.
And that's what's cool about combat sports, is that it's experience. It's not talk, it's not idealize how experience would feel like. No, you're getting a real, as raw as it is, as a real full experience where it just, everything is going to change. So you can't have a set plan to, I mean, you're going to have a plan, but it's going to change in 3 seconds, because whatever the opponent gives you, you have to adapt, you have to respond, you have to, it's like a beautiful dance in a way.
That's a great, you cannot go into a fight with, you know, 1 through 10 of what you're going to do.
Right.
It's all about mirroring what your opponent is doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to have a strategy as far as, oh, this guy is strong in these areas, I want to take the fight in this area where he's weaker. So it's good to have a plan, but it has to be a flexible plan, because he's going to throw things at you that change the initial dynamics. So it's not going to work out exactly the way you have it in your head, unless you are God, in which case you don't even need a plan, because you could beat him by snapping your fingers, you know?
That would suck.
Yeah.
To have to wrestle God. By the way, who at the most famous? Abraham had to wrestle God. Right. Is that right?
Yeah, I think one of his kids. But he is a biblical character.
Who was it? It was this is one of the Jacob. Was it Jacob?
I think it was Jacob.
So the angel climbs down Jacob's ladder. Isn't that the story? And they wrestle and he displaces a rib, and as an award, given what? He's given, I think, the promised land or something. There's a big reward. And also, the story of Maze. Isn't all that about wrestling? The Great Spirit comes down and wrestles with...
Which one is that?
Korn. The story of Korn. Didn't the Great Spirit come down and wrestle with... this wrestling or grappling is a metaphor for the internal struggle that we all face with existence.
Right.
And I think in both of those stories, some injury happened to the mythical figure. They were wounded in some way from
leg lock god.
Yeah. God, yeah. You're wrestling with God. You're going to get like your shoulder's going to get thrown out or something. Man. To me, martial arts and my brief experience with them, I've been wanting to start taking classes again, but my brief experience with them, it teaches me something about, because I love reading philosophies. Mm-hmm. I love reading the Bhagavad Gita. I love reading about Taoism. I love reading Aleister Crowley. I love reading all this stuff, but you begin to realize like, but you're just, what is that? What is that? Until you start applying the ideas to life, be reading romance.
No, I have the same thing. I mean, I love reading. I get so much out of it. But if that's all you ever do, Jesus, man, get out of the house sometime too. You know,
like,
there's life out there as well.
But we have these dogmatic religions in the world right now. We have these fundamentalists who aren't adapting to the environment.
No, of course not. And again, to me, is that's enormous fear of life. Enormous fear of everything that drive people to want certainties, even when there are no certainties. Because, I mean, what the fuck do you know what happens after you die or how the universe works? Or, you know, there are a million things that we don't know and we'll never know. And most people freak about the concept of not knowing. And so they're like, if you can't give me an evidence-based answer, then just give me some bullshit answer because I can't deal with having no answer. So I'm going to, you know, some random... That's the thing, is like, again, most people imagine some strange, weird tyrant enslaving people. Most people are rushing to be enslaved. You know what I mean? It's like, please give me a dogma now that I can follow and makes me feel secure and tuck my blanket in at night and makes me... Because it gives you answers, you know? It gives you a sense of somebody die. You have reasons for it. Yes. You have all these explanations for dealing with grief. You have explanations to deal with your own death. You have explanation for every shit that happens to you. There's some way in which it all works out in the end.
Right.
If you don't believe that, then you have a tough thing to deal with. Because it's like, shit happens, maybe for no good reason, and you have no control over it. Welcome to life.
Well, isn't that bigger? Isn't that a bigger God? Like that God? Isn't that a more interesting God? The God, a God that is beyond reason, a God that's beyond human logic, a God that's beyond anything you can imagine. Isn't this what this is? God? So many songs have been sung about this story. The story of man. What's his name? God just decided to fuck him up. What's his name?
Job.
Job. Yeah. Just a great guy, wonderful, had a farm, lots of nice kids.
Yeah, that's like one of the most perverted stories ever. Like, God and the devil have this contest where the devil is like, I bet that if you just throw enough shit at that guy that you say is the most faithful, whatever, he's gonna renounce you and he's gonna turn to me. And God is like, let's see, I'll fuck his life up. And he starts throwing, you know, kill his kids and ruin his life in every conceivable way. And it's just like, what the fuck, man? You know, that's the reward you get for being faithful. And the best part I get is that at the end, when he stay faithful despite all this shit, then God will make it all right by giving him new kids and a new wife. And I'm like, that's great for him. What about the kids you just killed? You know, what about them? How do you make... I don't know.
No, it's an awesome story when you realize that Satan won that story, because basically God's just this easily manipulated dumbass.
Like Satan, I dare you to fuck his life up.
I dare you to fuck up your most devout follower. Satan's like, watch, I can make God do anything. Do anything. He's just a dope. He's just a fucking asshole. He's like throwing down. It's not just good deaths either. I believe at one point Job had been covered with sores, correct? Like, just so, but again, as a literal interpretation, it's an absolute ridiculous, silly, moronic, idiot story about a toddler god who is in a playground with his pal and is just throwing matches at ants for fun. But and that is, I think, a lot of that's as far as some forms of Christianity go with the story. But I think the bigger idea of that story isn't it more like, hey, it doesn't, if you're doing good, because you want some reward, or you're doing good because you expect logic.
Right.
You're going to get fucked up.
Yep.
You're going to get disappointed.
Yep.
It's not going to work.
No.
If that's why you, and this is the idea of like getting caught up in the turbulence, the momentary turbulence that rises in your life. You know, if you're like, okay, I'm going to be a good person, and by good person, I mean I'm going to be selfless and give more than give out more than I take, and you do this until some conflict arises, and then you're like, no, okay, that's it. I'm just going to go back to...
Right, because you want the reward, right? It's
yeah.
like, that's why I think what dogma is so appealing is that appeals to our sense of fairness.
Right.
There's this, if I do this, then these good things will come, or if I live the life, or if I swear Jesus is my guy or whatever, then I'll go to heaven. There's a reward, and it's like the way you train donkeys, you know what I mean? It's like carrot and stick. It's like,
yeah.
if you are a good boy, I'll give you the carrot. If you're bad, I'll whack you on the head. And that's how you learn, and people like that because it feels reassuring. You know what to do. If
right.
I do the right things, then I'll be rewarded and life will be okay.
Right.
And he's like, it's got a surprise for you.
A big surprise.
Not the way it works.
Not the way it works.
No.
But this is the thing. When you base your rewards on things in the material universe, you're going to be disappointed.
Right.
But there's another transcendent joy that you can get that isn't
Absolutely.
Grounded in space and time.
That's why people think, like, if you don't believe this shit, then you're going to turn into this evil bastard who's selfish and is going to screw everyone over, because if there's no greater system of morality that, you know, with Santa Claus watching you in the sky, rewarding the good and punishing the bad, then if you don't have that, everybody will be an asshole who's trying to rob their neighbors. And not really, because, I mean, some people will, but the point is, if you are a half a decent human being, you get a lot out of it by doing things, not because there's a great reward afterwards, because the very act of doing it makes you happy. You know, it makes
That's
me happy
it.
To make somebody else happy. You know what I mean? It's
That's
like,
it.
I don't need the, it would be nice if they give me the gold medal and my life is set after that, but you have to, are you going to do those very things anyway, whether you're going to be rewarded for it or not, because you like to?
Yeah.
Or, because in one case, you're just an asshole who's forced to become good by this
cop.
Exactly. The cop in the sky who's forcing you to be a good guy.
Yeah.
In which case, you're just an asshole in disguise.
Yeah. You're just, you're kind of a coward anyway.
Yeah.
If you don't want to do it, you should try to disarm the fucking cop and do whatever the thing is that you're wanting to do anyway. Be evil.
Precisely.
If you're wanting to be fucking evil, be evil.
Yeah.
Go for it. Don't be a pussy and act nice because some invisible guy's got a gun to your head.
Yeah.
Mouth fuck that nun, you coward. If that's the thing.
Right.
Go for it. But I think that it's like the, when you were saying that, it made me think of like a bee. When a bee is flying into a flower to get pollen, it's not thinking, I'm fertilizing
right.
flowers. It's probably just feels good to the bee. I
yep.
always get the sense that the bee's getting off and swimming around in that flower because it's like a psychedelic, awesome
right.
mini bounce for bees. Like those things you get for your kid at their birthday or something. It just looks fun.
Yeah, totally.
The bee just, this is fun.
Yeah.
I like doing this. I don't care about the, it probably isn't even thinking about the larva. Well, it's not thinking about anything.
Right.
It's just a fucking bee. Just a dumb bee. But if it could think, you know, that's the idea. People get so caught up in the future reward.
Right.
Instead of the present reward.
Yep, exactly. And again, it goes back to that idea of, I don't know, people's morality puzzles me. I have a very, it's weird, I have a very flexible morality on one end, but at the same time, like normal social rules, I'm like, I don't know, I'm stuck with my teenage years or something. So if there's a legal way of doing things and there's an illegal way to do things, somehow the illegal one seems so much more fun most
Always.
Of the time. But at the same time, because I have a flexible morality, I also have a few things where I'm never going to fuck with them. You know, it's like, if I give you my word, I'll go samurai if I fuck up. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
My alternative to breaking my word is sticking 12 inches of iron in my belly.
Right.
If somebody gives me their trust, I'm never going to fuck with that. You
right.
know, or, and as much as humanly possible, I'm going to try not to hurt people because it sucks. Because
yes.
it's just not because somebody tells me, because it feels ugly, looks ugly. There's something that, so those things I'm going to touch, but everything else, I feel if it doesn't break any one of these three things, everything else is fair
Hell
game.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know how I look at it, man? I look at it as like, anchors. I look mm-hmm. at it as if you've got this ship and you're trying to sail towards this destination, mm-hmm. and then you want speed. Mm-hmm. And I think that these actions, when you do some shitty thing to a person, I think the most specific example for a guy, or one easy way to know what I'm, is like when you trick a girl into fucking you and you don't really like her.
No, that's fucked up.
It's fucked up. You know, you trick a girl into fucking you. You just want the physical pleasure of mm-hmm. fucking the girl. You make her think that you like her, and then you end up with this intense karma because now you've hurt this person, and inside you feel like shit.
Yeah.
You feel bad. Now you've got this anchor on your ship, and it's slowing you down towards this final destination. You know, it just slows you. It slows you down to feel bad.
Totally. No, it's, and I agree. It's that's the kind of stuff that, for being all the, you know, quote unquote immoral, in the sense that I don't follow most traditional morality, that's the kind of shit that enrages me. You know, I feel like, why do you have to be such an asshole to just hurt people like that? You know, and that really bugs me.
Because it is hurt. It is violent. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times when guys are I call them pussy guys. Mm-hmm. You know, guys who are just like, yeah, look, I like a girl. I mean, by the way, I do this too. I don't do it like that.
Right.
Some guys do it with aggression.
Yeah.
Like a girl walk by, it's like, look at that bitch.
Right.
Oh, check out that bitch's tits. But they're mad.
I know.
They're angry. They're angry at her tits.
Yep.
Or she's like, why are you mad at these wonderful tits? I know.
I'm like, I want to go on my knees and worship. Why are you such an asshole about it? You know? Yeah, totally. I got it.
What is that?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, so many, I don't know how it works on the other side from women's standpoint, but from so many men, there's this weird double standard between what they want and whatever weird morality got implanted in their head early on. So like the way most guys talk about women, and they are all, you know, on one end you want sex, on the other end they are all like talking shit if women sleep around. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Sluts, like, to me, speaking a weird brand of English, some words are strange to me. So when they first introduced the word slut to me, I was a slut. Yeah, I'm like, that's somebody who freely gives away sex somewhat indiscriminately. It's like Mother Teresa, you know, it's like a philanthropist, it's a humanitarian, it's a good thing, right? And instead it was used in all this very vulgar, ugly way. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's like the goddess of mercy.
Yes, it is merciful.
Yeah, it's like giving their gifts. You should worship that woman.
Yes, you should. Bring them flowers. So,
yeah,
bring them offerings.
Yeah.
Bring them fruit.
Yep.
But why in the name of God would you try to make that person feel terrible about such a kind and beautiful act?
So I hate most guys. I feel like, are you kidding me? Why do you have to be such an ass? I don't know. It's just... I hate most people, men, women, animals, whatever, but still.
Well, you know, a lot of people are in autopilot, you know,
right.
But I think with guys what happened is, they say that in the 1800s and before, people were smaller than they are now because they were malnourished.
Right.
And I believe they say in North Korea, people are much smaller because they aren't getting enough calories.
Yeah.
So in the same way, I think sex is a kind of food that people need.
Yeah.
And there's been a famine for a lot of guys that didn't get the sex that they needed. And so it fucked them up. People who've been starving for a long time get fucked up. You know, you can always tell people who were raised in families that didn't have a lot of money because they always talk about how much everything costs.
Right.
You know, like, and by the way, you can always tell people who are raising a family that have a lot of money. I mean, me. Like, I find myself almost sometimes like a fetish, fixated on the prices of things. Mm. Or I'll find my mind being like, wow, I can't believe that costs that much. How much does that cost? How much does that cost? What's the rent on this place? How much does your car cost? How much are those shoes?
All right.
Always trying to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that comes from being in a place where those numbers really meant something, you know?
Of course.
And I have to, you know, and so those are the same people who give shitty tips. I've had to like compensate for that by going overboard when it comes to putting stuff out. But anyway, famine damage. That's what that is, right?
Right. I guess. And I don't know if it's weird imprinting as kids where they gave them like shame about sex or some weird. So obviously you have a sex drive, so you're going to be all into it. But at the same time, you have been taught to feel bad about it. And so you have these conflicting things where the woman who turns you on, you're going to be, you want her and you're pissed with her. And he's like, you freak, just go to a shrink, solve your problems, and appreciate the beauty that is this freaking woman walking by, you know?
He's
like,
go to a shrink.
Seriously. Well, I actually don't know that shrink will solve the problem, but whatever, you know, do whatever it is to deal with your stupid crap because it's annoying. And it's...
It is annoying. Anyway, it's a very annoying thing, but this is, I guess this is just part of like, plenty. I know a lot of guys out there are listening to this right now, recognizing that quality in them. But it's tough, man. It's hard to be a good person. It's hard to overcome your shit.
Yeah.
We've got fucked up rudders. Our ships, the rudders are all messed up.
That's why, to me, the warrior thing is interesting because, I mean, it sounds so fortune cookie-like to say, you know, the real conflict is within or some shit.
Yes.
You know? But at the same time, it's real because most of it is... You know, fighting externally trains you to deal with adversity, to deal with the fact that things are difficult, that they are hard, so that then you can deal with your own shit, which is ultimately way more important than punching somebody's guys off, you know?
Like, yes.
You, yeah, great, you knock somebody out, good. That's, you're still an asshole.
Yeah.
What about, you know, instead using that same ability to fight to deal with all the crap that comes up? Because it is a fight, you know, as you say, it's not that you do things once and you solve all your problems.
No.
So you come to a realization and suddenly you're a sweet, nice person. You have to work at it constantly. And so you fight with it.
There are many rounds in this fight.
Oh, yeah.
And it is a wrestling match.
No. I mean, hell, every day there are moments where I look at myself and I'm like, Jesus Christ, why do you have to be such a dick?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, let me work on it. And you have to want it. And then you have to have the stamina to keep doing it because it's going to keep coming up every other day of your life. You know?
So in what happens for me is there will be of something that happens, whatever it is throughout the day, something will happen with a person and I'll feel this specific emotion. The emotion is usually the emotion of a cunt. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah.
Like, cunty.
Yeah, I can relate.
Shitty fucking feeling of like wanting to do the worst thing in that situation.
Right.
But what I'm... So for me, my wrestling match is not basing my actions on my feelings.
Right.
Right? It's not about basing your actions on your feelings.
Or at least the initial superficial feeling that drives from frustration, that drives from whatever else. Because maybe, you know, the other feeling that you get is like when you say that it makes you happy to make people feel good around you or something.
Yeah.
That's also a feeling. And it's probably more sort of deeper and less superficial. So you get to get in touch with that one and squash the immediate, you cut me off in traffic, I'm going to kill you.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And that does happen. People kill people who cut them off in traffic. And in fact, one of the most disturbing 911 call transcripts I've ever seen was a woman calling 911 and saying, I just shot somebody. I just shot her. She's dying in front of me. And it was, she had road rage, chased the lady. The lady stopped. She got out of her car and shot her in the face with a pistol.
Jesus Christ.
Life over.
Yeah.
The end.
Wow.
Game over. Prison.
Yep.
You're doomed because you went off that initial feeling.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, because you can. That's why when people say, you know, be in touch with your feelings, of course, you know, that's a good thing. But at the same time, you need to choose some feelings you want to acknowledge and push to the side.
Yes.
Some feelings, yes, you want to indulge in. Not every feeling is born equal.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I think there's been this pop psychology thing where we all got taught, like, say how you feel.
Right.
How do you feel? Tell me how you feel. How do I fucking feel? I feel like a fucking animal.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like a screaming ape in the middle of a primordial shit forest just trying to fucking strangle anything that comes near me. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I don't feel like a fucking Dalai Lama.
Right.
I feel like fucking ripping hearts out of the chests of my enemies.
That's why when I read New Agers and stuff, I mean, there's something sweet there, but at the same time, if at the same time you're not listening to Eminem, I have a problem there, you know?
It's
I saw a Twitter thing maybe a month ago with Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Crack me up. There was this tweet by Deepak Chopra, you know, very New Agey.
Yes.
And he's all like, I forget the exact words, but something along the lines like, when you achieve a pure consciousness, no problems will exist, so no solution will be needed. And it's like, ooh, mystic. And Joe wrote, well, if you achieve pure consciousness, but somebody kicks you in the balls, you still have problems.
It's true.
I thought it was awesome because it's like, it's true. It's exactly true. Yeah.
And I, so because this podcast, sometimes I do go into the new age side of things and I like to talk about the new agey stuff. Sometimes I will swing to the other side and go super negative. Like me, I had a podcast with Tim Heidecker. I don't know if you get a chance to listen to it, because it's one of my favorite ones I ever did. Right. But it's just a passive aggressive fight between me and Heidecker for fun for an hour. And so I got it. I got some messages after that from people that are like, well, for someone so spiritual, you sure seem like a dick.
Right.
It's like, fuck you, I am a dick. It's part of life.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. That's why when people talk, precisely because I like that stuff, it pisses me off when people turn it into a Disneyland version of the real thing. Yeah. You know, to me, spirituality is playing in the mud with your kids. That can be spiritual, you know.
Yes.
It's not just going home in a lotus position, thinking positive thoughts. Right. I mean, that's cool too.
Fine.
But if you balance it with other things, otherwise that's bullshit. You know, you're lying to yourself.
Yes, you are. And you're not getting the full, it's like you're not getting the full experience of life either.
Exactly.
Some of the most supposedly spiritual people who claim to be spiritual, when you meet them, they are a million times worse than someone who's just like a bar fighter.
Yeah.
There's some poisonous, noxious quality to them where they're all sweet and flowers, but somehow you just feel bad around them. They're like making you feel guilty or dirty, or it's like, come on.
Because it's an act. I mean, you can't be that way 24/7. Nobody is. It's like, it's bullshit if you try to be that. And people who try so hard to be that way in every second of the day, never acknowledging other things, you go nuts. And you put on, you know, you are putting up this face in front of everybody. And maybe even in front of yourself. Maybe you believe it, but inside you have this weird shit that's going on all the time. Yeah. And it's going to drive you nuts. It's like, you know, Catholic priests being like, celibacy is the way to go, and think that way all the time. And soon enough, you start checking out little boys, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, so it's healthy to acknowledge some shit, deal with it, bring it in the open, and deal with it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny, man.
Because if you don't, you can find your face buried in an 8-year-old's asshole.
Yeah.
Because you didn't fucking deal with it.
Exactly.
Now you're dealing with it in a horrible way. You got to bring it out, man.
Yeah.
You got to bring it out, or fucking toddler assholes will turn into magnets for your face.
Lovely. Lovely image. It's
dangerous.
Right.
It's dangerous, but this is the problem when you've got a parasite.
Right.
When you have a parasite, if you have a, I don't know, have you ever seen videos on the internet of people have parasites in their stomach? And it shows like a scope goes down there and you see the worms kind of like just zinging around in there.
You can't
ignore parasites.
Right.
You can't ignore the parasite inside of you.
Well, definitely.
You gotta have a sit down with a parasite.
Yeah.
You know? And talk to the damn thing, you know.
That's why to me it's healthy to go and punch a heavy bag or go work, you know, bring out aggression in a safe way, in a cool environment where you can, you know, you express it that way, it feels good, gives you a good body, you get a good workout, that's great. You don't deal with it at all, it will come out where you just stomp your kids when they, you know, spill milk on the floor or something.
That's the thing about people who are into the martial arts. And since I go on the road with Rogan sometimes, I get to go to the UFCs. I go to the UFCs and sometimes I get to meet the fighters.
Right.
And when you get around these people, outside of a few who are just terrifying no matter what.
Right.
When you get around them, you forget that they're dead. They're like deadly, deadly vipers.
Right.
Deadly trained people. And then you start feeling really comfortable around them, and I've fucking sassed off in a bad way to some of them before, not because I'm brave, but just because they're so nice. I forget.
Yeah.
I've been in my hotel room after that all of a sudden being like,
did I just say that? Right.
What's wrong with you? What do you totally forgot? Because they're a million times more peaceful than someone who isn't a trained fighter.
Right.
People who aren't trained fighters seem more likely to like haul off and punch you than fighters.
Yeah, because there's all that pent up aggression, you know, and it's all like, it never finds a way out. And so it turns ugly. I mean, aggression in itself is not bad if you use it in the right way. But if you use it, if you don't, then it kind of festers inside of you. It will fuck you up.
It will fuck you up. It's a poison.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like a toxic cloud or something like that.
Yeah.
Man, I got to start taking martial arts again. What should I start taking?
I don't know, what are you into? You like punching things more? You like grappling? What's your thing?
I don't know. I don't know. Making out. Is there any martial arts based around kissing girls or?
Jiu-jitsu is perfect for you.
Okay, we're gonna cut to a commercial. We're back. We're talking about fighting girls, priests, Job, Krishna, Arjuna, coward Jesus.
Poor Jesus.
That is weird, though. Like, if you knew that Jesus could fight,
right?
Like, if that was part of the thing where, like, what, instead, you know, he walks on water, great.
Right.
Multiplies the fish, awesome. Water and wine, cool. But if at one point he just beat the shit out of a gladiator.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, there's something close, I guess, when he goes into the temple and he just throws them all out and shit. It doesn't have
he
that
had
same.
A baby tantrum. It's a baby tantrum. This is my father's house. This is my daddy's house. I did that once at my house. I had some friends over when I was like 14. I had some friends over, and my friend Brian Peeler filled an egg with water and broke it on my head. And the water went down my head, and I thought it was egg he'd put on my head, and I was in a cunty mood. I'm like, get out of my house!
And nobody wrote a sacred book about you.
No.
How unfair.
I can't do miracles. I fucking didn't get crucified.
Yeah.
I was just a little baby. Get out of my house! You're not welcome here anymore! That's just a rich kid.
Right.
This is my father's house. If you're at a party and somebody says that, you're like, all right.
Yeah.
Or, see you later,
yeah,
idiot.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I won't sell chickens here.
No, I get you. You know, beating a gladiator would be more fun. Yes.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, we know you can do, like, magic.
Right.
But where's the fucking claws?
Right.
Because it really is kind of the whole Jesus story from the literal perspective is like, I'm gonna come back and beat you all up.
Right.
Never comes back.
Right.
Just splits. That's the guy who gets mad at the party and he's like, I'm gonna come back. And you just fucking wait till I come back, because I'm gonna come back as a lion.
You'll drown in blood.
Yeah, you're gonna drown in blood. There's gonna be a plague. I mean, nothing.
Yeah, just gone.
Gets in the Hyundai and is gone. Back to the Days End to jerk off to cheap porn or whatever he's doing now.
I feel bad for the early Christian, because the early Christian really believed that it was going to happen any minute.
Right.
And so they were like, every minute was like, the end of the world is coming. The end of the world is coming. It's like, well, you can only say it for so long. After a while, it's like, okay, maybe not.
Maybe
tomorrow.
Not.
Right.
Maybe he was wrong.
Right.
Maybe we. But it is, that is, I think that I was, well, Jesus did say, he did keep saying, at least in the Gospels, he did keep saying, I'm going to come back, right?
Yep. Big time.
He said that all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of like the Gnostic idea of it, or the idea that, like, the, you know, here's the problem. Literal interpretations are destroying the world. We all want literal. We all want everything to be on the level. We're tired of symbols.
At the same time, when you come up with a cool myth, it would be good if the deeper interpretation doesn't seem completely at odds with the literal one.
Right.
Maybe you can come up with a literal one that's pleasant, and then you can have a deeper one that's even cooler.
Yeah.
You know, but if you come up with a literal one that's horrendously fucked up, yes, people are going to be thrown a bit off by that, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
So,
oh my God, you're right.
This is like,
I always try to justify it by being like, yeah, but the deeper meaning of it, it's like, fuck the deeper meaning. You were talking to monkeys.
Right.
When you're some kind of hyper-dimensional alien that flew down here and let the monkeys kill you is some kind of story for them to live by.
Right.
But that you knew, you were God. You knew they were going to turn this into a way to burn gay people or to kill witches or to enslave people.
Yeah, exactly.
Why didn't you make it like right on the money, like we're not killing anymore?
Let me spell it out for you. This is, that would be nice.
This is
that
peace.
Cool.
We're going to help each other and form communes and try to heal each other and work amazing miracles together. Don't turn it into something that's like, I come with a sword.
And then you have to steer things, you know, there should be Jesus 2.0, Jesus 3.0, like every few years there should be a new show up. It's like, no, you guys are fucking it up. I meant it this way. Let me explain it to you again. Then you go off, they're okay for a while, and then you come back, and, you know.
Yeah, Bibles, you know, like on your Kindle when it's like there's an OS update.
Right.
That's what Bibles need from heaven.
Exactly.
Like, we're updating this. We didn't mean that the...
Yeah, you guys fucked up again. You misunderstood this. Let me explain it again. You
know, it's like, but there's no way to... That's the big problem, because we have to... See, some part of me thinks that these... it's kind of the same way that you're talking about, you know, if you can't get your life together, well, forget it. Right. Just fucking check out then if everything sucks so bad. In the same way, it feels like the way the universe works, and if the Bible or the true Christianity were an expression of this universal truth, it's not going to be for everyone. It's not going to be a sweet thing. It's just going to be when you see the turtles get born, you know, from the eggs at the beach, they just, some of them get immediately eaten by seagulls.
Yeah.
Just like, boom, gone, dead, gone, dead, gone. But raccoons come and eat the fun. It's not a sweet thing happening here.
Not at all.
You know, and so I think in the same way with that story, maybe it's not. Maybe it's like, yeah, fucking dumbasses are going to turn it into the totally wrong thing.
Uh-huh.
They're not going to get any of the juice inside of it.
Right.
It's like a coconut.
Right.
Christianity's like a coconut, and fundamentalist Christians are like people licking the outside of the coconut and pretending they're drinking coconut milk.
Oh, man, I love this. It's brilliant.
Good, yeah. This is, oh, what a delicious coconut, just like God wanted. Mm. What are you doing breaking open that coconut and drinking the milk, you pagan, evil son of a bitch?
I love this.
Fucking, you gotta break that coconut open, you know? People don't want to do that. They're lazy.
Right.
They're fucking lazy, man. And
but at the same time, if you're God, fucking design a coconut that's not so damn hard. You know what I mean? It's like, it can be a little work, but not like the opposite of what's inside. You know what I mean?
I do this thing in my act that sometimes I do this satanic ventriloquist act.
Right.
And it's really uncomfortable. And in the crowd, there's people who will get it, and then there's people who don't. And I feel like part of the act is not just me on stage, but it's also people getting to enjoy the expressions of horror and confusion on the faces of people near them.
Who don't get it, right?
So maybe that's part of maybe that's part of the fun. If we're going to embody God as this kind of thing, maybe God's like, look at those, look.
Right.
At them. Look at them licking that fucking coconut. They're getting splinters in their mouth.
No, if it was just about them, I would have no problem with it. I think it would be hilarious and it would be funny. When you start burning people at the stake and they are getting burned, that bugs me a little more.
We still end up with Loon Loon, don't we?
Yeah,
we end
exactly.
up with a loony god.
Yeah.
Loon Loon.
Yeah.
That's dumb dumb. Come on, man. What are you doing? But, you know, this is something where, like, I don't know the exact quote, but Nietzsche talks about... how we need the idiots is a kind of pull-up bar, you know, I don't know the exact quote, but it's something about the idea that you want the people who are weak, you want the people who are cowards, you want those people so you can, as negative examples of what not to be.
Sweet old Nietzsche, right.
Yeah, we don't want just the good, do we?
Right.
You don't want just like the people, the developed people, you want to be able to look at like the schlubby, cowardly, selfish people so you can look at them and be like, I'm not gonna be that.
I think I'm bugged by the percentages though, because if it was, you know, you have the examples that kind of keep things in perspective, I'm fine with that. I get it. The fact that that's often the majority, that disturbs me a bit.
That the majority are...
Of people.
Are foolish.
Right. Where, I mean, when you look at human history, so much fucked up stuff all the time being the name of the game, essentially. And, you know, there are plenty of good exceptions, but they are certainly not the majority for any length of time. I feel like, man, why sink into the lowest common denominator all the time? You know, why is the average so damn low? I feel like, I don't know if it happens to you, like a bunch of things that I do, I feel that when I get good feedback, or like I teach, for example, I teach class, and sometimes I teach a shitty class, I feel like crap, I feel like, I'm sorry guys, I'm out of it today, and like, what are you talking about? It's great. And I'm like, no, it's not, it sucks. And then I look into the next classroom, and I look what the average look like, and I'm like, oh my God, my shittiest day is better than that.
Right.
I can, but that doesn't, you know, it's because the bar is so low that it doesn't take much to be above it, you know?
Oh, yes. Right.
So I feel that like,
no,
if the bar was a little higher, that would be more fun for everybody.
In the world of blind men, the one-eyed man is king.
Right.
So yeah, but you know, I know what you mean. I kind of think of it from the point of view of like, Yes, the bar is low right now. Yes, mediocrity seems to be the way to be. And in fact, it's almost fashionable to be mediocre these days. But so I kind of think of it from the point of view of like, okay, what if Earth is like a spaceship?
Mm-hmm.
And you know in the movies where the spaceship starts malfunctioning or something, and all of a sudden the stasis pod will open up for one or two people. You know, like the computer's like, and then the thing opens up and they're like, what the fuck? I guess we're already here. Oh, wait, we're not here. We're in the middle of deep space and the machine's malfunctioning. I think maybe that's what it is. It's like you can like some people kind of come out of this trance in the middle of the of this long journey, evolutionary journey that we're on.
Right.
And when you see then the imperative becomes, OK, I got to be a little empathetic with these fucking cunts around me because they're in a ambient haze. Right.
And in fact, that's, by the way, me doing the exact the opposite of what I was saying, because I'm being all like whiny and judgmental about, look at those assholes who are so mediocre or whatever. And it's like, yeah, okay, now you recognize it, deal with it. Who cares? You know, you're not helping anybody by saying you suck. You're not helping yourself by going around being all...
It feels good. And you get a little bit of satisfaction out of it. Yeah. And you might as well do it because it's what's inside of you anyway. When you see it, you're like, are you fucking serious?
Yeah, you're
really like this? You're actually totally focused on yourself and have no sense of wanting to help anyone around you, and you're fucking thinking you're a good person.
Mm-hmm.
You're a dumbass. It's fun. You need that fuel. It gives you the fucking, this is my father's house. What the fuck? You need it. Yeah. You need it.
No, I mean, you're right. Getting it out there is cool. Yeah. Indulging for too long, after a while, is like, okay, cut that one out. Yeah. You know, you got it out. Now let's move on to, you know.
But you need that initial, when you really start waking up, man, you need that initial, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Because you need it. It's kind of like, this is something I meant to talk to. I wish I'd talked. You definitely must come back. I wish I'd talked to you about this more, but I wanted to talk to you about Sun Tzu's Art of War, and I wanted to talk to you about the where he says know your terrain.
Of course.
So you have to know so in that sense it's like we need to first understand the terrain that we're in.
Absolutely, because that's as good as it is to adapt to things. Unless you know what you're going to be dealing with, you're blind, you know, you're kind of lost. You want to have, that's why having a recipe is good. Knowing the terrain is good. Having a general map is good. Then it's good to be able to adapt. You need both. You know, if you have absolutely no clue what you're getting into, purely relying on instincts may not be the best thing.
No.
If you only go by the book, then you're a rigid asshole who's going to get fucked by things as soon as they change a tiny bit. You need both. You need to have instincts. You need to, and at the same time, you need to know the terrain, because otherwise you're just going in blind and never a good idea.
Never a good idea. No. That's when you get in that show, I shouldn't be alive.
Right, exactly. Right. So you need that, absolutely. And you need to know who's around you. You need to know the terrain. You need to know everything to come up with a flexible plan. You know what I mean? But you need to have a plan. Then you can go off the plan. It's like, I guess, when you do stand-up, you know what I mean? You kind of know where you want to go.
Sure.
And then you adapt it at the moment.
Right, absolutely. Or this podcast, or you know, now how would you describe the terrain of a modern human? How would you describe if that's not too big a question, the paradigm that we're in? I would say we're in a forest of cunts.
Oh man, I mean, I can't top that. You know, I'm just going to stay in a respectful silence, because, I mean, what else can I say?
but how do we deal with this? We need that. This is the thing. We need direction. What do we do? We're in if you're writing a guidebook to what to do if you wake up in a forest of cunts.
Right.
What's this? Should you wake in a forest of cunts?
Probably. Well, it doesn't matter. You are in it anyway. So whether you should or not, exactly. We can spend the day going, I shouldn't be here. This sucks. Yeah. Like, well, but you are. So deal with it.
So deal with it.
Yeah.
So what do we do?
Oh, man. No, I mean, that's what to me is... I'll go off on a tangent, but this is a cool story. So there's a cool Zen story. I love this to that. Is a guy who's not having the best day of his life. He's kind of like the Zen equivalent of Job, I guess. Is this guy who's wandering in the forest and all of a sudden he realized there's a tiger stalking him. And so he starts running and the tiger is chasing him. And he gets to the, you know, he's thinking he's getting away, but he's getting really to the edge of this cliff. And he's like, oh shit, the tiger is coming. What do I do? So he climbs onto this vine and pull himself a little bit down. So the tiger is on top looking down at him. And, you know, he's like trying to figure out, well, at least I'm not getting eaten. Now what do I do from this point?
Right.
At the same time, because his day is not going bad enough already, he looks down and he sees that there's another tiger at the bottom of the cliff that's going like, waiting for him, you know?
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, fuck, what now, you know? Again, his day is not quite bad enough yet, so he noticed that there are two mice who are beginning to munch on the vine he's standing on. So he's like, I'm fucked in every way, right?
Yeah.
And right at that point, he noticed there's this amazingly ripe, red, beautiful strawberry just barely out of reach, right?
Yeah.
And so he's like, I can try to hang on. What can I do? I can do this and that to try to... Or if I swing myself, maybe I can catch that strawberry, but then the odds are even higher that I may fall. And, you know, the whole story sets up this whole thing of what's he going to do? How is he going to solve the problem?
Yeah.
And the last line referring to the strawberry was how sweet it was.
Yeah!
And that's it.
I love it.
And I thought it was beautiful. You know, that's life. You know, you're not going to find a solution.
Yeah.
There are so many fucking things that you're not going to find a solution to. But you can taste that damn strawberry right now, you know?
Yeah. Eat that strawberry, yeah. You guys. Eat the strawberry.
Yeah.
And then have the mice for dessert. Thank you so much for coming on this show.
I had a blast.
Oh, you're
awesome.
The best. How can the listeners find you? Where are you? You're on Twitter.
Yeah, Joe told me to get on Twitter, so I faithfully obeyed.
I follow you on Twitter. Yeah. What's your Twitter handle?
Initial D, as in Daniel, so D Bolelli, B-O-L-E-L-L-I.
And I believe you have a Conan the Barbarian avatar.
Yeah,
right?
I have a picture of Conan the Barbarian driving his axe into his enemy's skulls.
Yes.
So that's always good.
And your book. Tell me about your book. Where can we get your book?
I have a couple of books, both of them easy on Amazon.
Okay.
One is called On the Warrior's Path, and that's about philosophy, martial arts. Another one I did just this last year is called 50 Things You're Not Supposed to Know, Religion. Is this series, the whole thing was a series that this company, this information has 50 Things You're Not Supposed to Know. They wanted to do one about religion, so I did. That was a blast. Coming up with the titles was half the fun. I got some, I don't know, I had one day I came up with this title for one of the chapters that was, My God Has Bigger Balls Than Your God. After I wrote that down, I felt like my day of work is done. You know, I've given enough today. I'll start again tomorrow.
That is funny. Yeah. Such a competition. God competitions are hilarious.
Yeah. So
that's badass. I'll put links to that. Do you have a website?
Actually working. I just started the other day to work on it. So I don't have it yet. It's going to be my name, Daniele Bolelli, but it's probably going to be up in a couple of months.
Cool. And you've got a podcast coming out.
That's what it's been great. After being on Joe's podcast, a lot of people were really cool, really sweet and nice to me. And they are telling me, start your own damn podcast,
I'm sure,
like, okay, fuck it, I'll do it. So it's gonna be probably not like maybe a monthly, not that often, but like once a month or something. And I'm thinking again late summer to get it going.
All right, cool. Well, it's been an amazing pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Great. Okay, bye. Now enjoy Immigrant Song from the remastered Led Zeppelin album Mothership, which is available on iTunes. Immigrant Song.